He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. They're in full flow. This is Car Keys.
Yes, we are, and
Robin always starts, so go.
Okay, well, I want to switch it over to you, Jill, because we apparently didn't cover some things you wanted to cover last week. Do you remember what they were? Because I don't.
I remember a couple of things, and one of which was tires, but no one got
Do you have a question about them? Because we've been talking about tires. It's a good topic to cover.
Well, that I don't have a question per se. I was talking about how that we were talking off the air about how an unfortunate incident had occurred that caused the tires of a very, shall we say, fancy automobile.
Yeah, what?
The favorite car that Jay wants and that I want to be shredded, but on the passenger side, both, and I was
due
trying
to curbing.
I don't know.
Well,
don't know.
I think you're
but
mainly talking
you
about when you park too close to some of these curbs that have been put on the highways, and they will.
Does that cut out your rims?
It can, depending on what happens, how close you scrunch your tire to these.
I've scrunched. I've parked in New York City before.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure about the New York City parking situation, but they've been doing these granite curbs on the highways in our neck of the woods over the last few repaving situations in the towns where the town halls are, for example, and you parallel park. And I think you can do a lot of rubber and sometimes rim damage if you hit them too hard or other maneuvers which might cause them to impale one or more of your tires and wheels.
Well, I remember the day when curbs were not as high as tires. And so when you parked a car and you hit the curb, the tire just went over the curb.
Right.
Nowadays, the curbs have gotten higher.
So they're like seawalls.
They're like seawalls with what, like Robin described, very sharp edges most of the time because we think they look cool and they're pretty and they're nice stone curbing. But you cut them at an angle with a tire that is now a low profile or ultra low profile tire, and that tire gets sliced and the rim goes right into the stone, and stone versus aluminum, stone wins every time.
Yes.
And like that car you saw on the side of the road, a rim can easily cost $500, $600, $700, $800, and tires can cost the same thing. So it gets to be an expensive proposition.
Yeah, and what was striking about that particular vehicle is that it was designed to be, and this is,
off-road?
It's just the marketing versus,
So what happens is people end up parking 2 feet from the curb, including myself, because we don't take chances with our tires, or we try not to. But to the point of low-profile tires and bigger rims and the absurdity of having them on SUVs that are made to primarily or were initially designed to go off-road, it just makes no sense having low-profile tires
on fancy rims on SUVs
on cars that even just on regular roads. You hit a pothole with an ultra low profile tire, a series 45 or 50,
and you can dent the wheel
and yes, they can be fixed, but it's expensive, and in the meantime your car is wobbling all over the road.
Unfortunately,
a lot of times when you buy a particular car in a particular model, the more you go upscale in that model and the trim level, the bigger the tires, because they bigger rims look cool, and we all think that ultra low profile tires handle the road better, and they do up to a point, but usually
at a comfort cost.
It's pointless to try to have ultimate grip on dry pavement, because that's not what overall handling is all about.
Yeah, and again, I'm sorry to be old, but the market is the whole way a car is marketed at this juncture seems to be, hey, this is a cool looking thing, so
they are a profit center for dealers for add-ons, additional markups and additional adjustments to some of the cars they get in, and or they sell a fancy tire wheel package to the buyer of the car because the buyer makes some comment about, oh, these don't look particularly great. And it's an open-ended invitation for them to be attacked by the parts department and the options department of the dealership or a store that sells optional things like fancy wheels and tires to people.
And tire sizes have been growing. Diameter of wheels have been growing over the last 20 years in a way that's just, you know, hard to believe.
Yeah, I remember that there wasn't, you didn't have that many choices.
It used
choices.
To be 13, 14, right. and 15 inch, yeah. and they went to 14, 15, and 16 inch, and now you get up into the upscale big cars and they're 20, 21, 19, 18.
What Mercedes is the benefit of that?
The Mercedes has this Maybach concept with 24 inch
wheels.
Yeah. And remember 10 years ago we were talking about dub-dubs? You know, dub-dubs were 22 inches. That was like the ultimate rim size. Right. Well, now we're up to 24 on concept cars.
What is the point? What is the benefit, if any?
Visual effect.
Yeah.
Okay.
And visual effect.
And so that would be sort of like shoes.
And the negative aspects are extremely expensive to replace on a per tire cost, buying those tires to fit those wheels. And those tires may not wear as long as, and that, I don't really think it's because of the size of the tire. I think it's just the compounds and what they're designed allegedly.
Is there as
do.
Much tire on the road when you've got rims that big?
There can be because usually as the diameter grows, the width of the rim and the tire grow
and
as
you
well.
Have a bigger footprint.
And you have a bigger footprint, but not necessarily.
How's
or,
that for
or
gas
marginally
mileage?
So.
More friction equals less gas mileage. More rubber on the road will equal less gas mileage, minimally probably within some levels.
Why does Toyota market the Prius hybrid
with skinny tires?
Very skinny tires to maximize the mileage you get out of the fuel mileage.
There used to be, and I don't remember which particular car company it was, that you would buy the car and then change the tires before you even left the dealership.
Well, that's often the case. Sometimes they come with extreme high-performance summer tires only, and in the New England climate, you probably can't drive those cars, and Porsches are one of them. And you can't drive those cars in anything but summer weather conditions.
I don't know. That was the first moment that I realized that there was the opportunity for somebody to make money off me. That I think
well,
it
you
was.
Didn't buy a Porsche
no,
to do that.
I did not. This was it's coming back to me now. This was years and years and years ago. A friend wanted one of the first what's now called a high profile. She wanted to be up over traffic. She was a small frame
vehicle.
Right, and she. I think she was. She went and checked the Isuzu Trooper. You know, I don't think she ended up getting
it. Yeah.
It was high. It rolled over. But I mean, that was before they.
But they didn't come with tires you wanted to immediately change.
No.
What we're dealing with here is a tread compound. And back in yesteryear, last century, tires did not have the all-weather tire tread designs that they do today, which allows them basically, if you like them, to be used year-round if you don't have extreme seizing conditions between summer and winter.
Can you use year-round tires here?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. With the plowing and the road clearing and the salt and all the stuff that goes on, you have to modify your driving patterns
a bit. It's a conditional yes.
In the wintertime. I agree. Conditional yes.
You know, and tires are like life. It's all about compromise. You can find very good year-round tires that will perform relatively well in the dry, relatively well in the rain, and relatively well in the snow. Although, you know, it's commonly believed that a tire that performs well in the snow is going to perform well in the rain, or that, you know, rain and snow tires have pretty much the same characteristics. They actually don't. And I was surprised to read about that myself. But you want to find a tire that's better in the rain and in the snow, and even if it's not optimal in the dry, because the reality is on dry pavement, we never even come close to losing grip on pavement.
Correct.
In normal driving circumstances. I mean, the grip of cars is such that you're never going to drive a car
over its
rarely
tire capability.
pass the tire capability.
At legal speeds that we have, especially around here. You'd have to really be exceeding the speed limit to really get out of control with what Jay is talking about. But on dry pavement, most tires are going to stick so well, they're not going to be a problem no matter what tread pattern or compound they may have on them. But compounds are now temperature sensitive, and especially that applies to winter compounded tires because cold weather and opposed to warm weather, it stiffens up a lot of materials. And one of the materials is the rubber of a tire. And stiff rubber doesn't grip as well as softer rubber. And so compounds for winter tires tend to have a softer compound that will resist stiffening up during cold temperatures so that it will grip better on turns and in the snow conditions. And that is a major advance, and it probably started in the last century, but it's more so now. And as Jay said, you can go shopping on these tire online tire salespeople, and they've got tires to do everything you would ever not think, but might fantasize you might want to do, and you can buy tires specifically to deal with that particular driving fantasy. But it may not be good for the rest of the driving situation.
So you could basically, like a wine cellar, you could get a tire rim.
Well, for example, in the car magazines, not the off-road magazines, you see advertising for car-ready and compatible tires. In the off-road magazines, like Four Wheeler, which is Jeep and all that, all the tire ads are amazing off-road type tread comp tires with incredible tire tread patterns, which you would never think of seeing on a Cadillac or a Chevrolet or a Ford. And so they are advertising to the media that's buying the particular type of magazine, car, automobile, or off-road magazine that's out there. But when you go from that extreme type of magazine to the regular Car and Driver's, Motor Trends, and Automobiles, that type of thing, you see a completely different marketing pattern.
To maybe
interject,
wind up,
interject, and wind up the tire
topic.
Tires are expensive. Tires are important. Don't run your tires until you don't do like me. Change your tires before it's too late and do your research, and you can do the reading. Not all, we have reputable brands of tires, and within those brands of tires, some tires are very good and others are not. And know what you're looking for, if you are going to have a year-round tire or not, and look at prices. I just bought tires for my SUV. It's a big SUV. And I saved a bunch of money buying a tire that is not well known and gets great reviews and tests well, and I've driven it in the rain, and it's a great tire.
And most important, like really, really, really lowest common denominator here is know that tires are an important part of your car.
They are. Manufacturers often price shop from the manufacturers when they decide what they're going to equip their vehicles with on the assembly line. And they're not necessarily cheap tires. I happen to like the Firestone Destinations that come on Jeep Cherokees, and they're still coming on Jeep Cherokees. They're not the off-road version of them. They use a different manufacturer and a different tire tread design for the Trailhawk versions.
Do you have to specify when you are going Jeep shopping?
But to that point, my father always wanted Michelin tires. And you talked earlier about, I'm trying to wind this up, but you talked earlier about, are there cases where the cars arrive on the truck to the dealership and before it comes out, you have traded the tire, you've changed the tires? Well, my father was one of those people. He became a Michelin aficionado, and all he wanted was Michelin tires. So any car that he purchased from a dealership during his lifetime, they ended up coming out before he took delivery with Michelins on them. So they would take the stock tires off and put on Michelins, sometimes for no charge, sometimes there'd be a minor charge difference, depending. That's way back in the last century that happened. So you have people like that who always want Michelins. I think actually Jay and I, we've talked about Michelins, He's put Michelins on some of his vehicles, and I've put Michelins on some of my vehicles, but I also have Goodyear and B.F. Goodrich on a couple of them, and Jay has just switched off from Michelin to the How do you pronounce that tire?
I never know.
Vredestein.
It's a Dutch tire.
It's a Dutch tire.
And not well known since for 100 years or so.
You don't find tires like this at your local area tire dealers. And there's some good local area dealers that are around. Well, you can shop everything online, but you've got dealers that in Tarrington that sell Firestones. You've got dealers that sell Goodyears, and then you've got dealers that sell that specify major Michelins. So you can shop the whole realm, and then you can go online and shop even more.
Okay, they're going to call this show Tire Talk, or you're going to change the subject.
What else did we forget to talk about last week?
You got. You were just about to get into a debate about something, but that eludes me. Because it's
whatever. We were going to get into a debate about something, and it eludes me too. So let me see if I can shift to. One of my favorite questionable rants is Elon Musk and his new assembly line arrangement that seems to be now producing the Model 3s or whatever, some brand, at 5,000 vehicles a week. And I haven't heard much since there was a big headline saying they'd achieved that, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago. I haven't heard anything or looked to see whether
there
it's
was something
going
after that. There were some troubles, and
but we have not seen a Model 3 in this corner yet. I don't believe there may be one or two around. We usually are lucky in this corner of our broadcast world to see many of the newest cars show up in someone's hands, whether it's a lease, whether it might be a dealer's car or not. But I have been looking for the Model 3 and have not yet seen it.
But it should be imminent, yes?
It should be imminent. Imminent. I saw my first two, actually, Model 3s about 6 months ago now. No. In March or April, so 3 or 4 months.
An acquaintance of mine ordered a Model 3, and he only ordered it like less than 6 weeks ago, and he was supposed to pick it up last Wednesday and send me a picture. He has not picked it up. I have not followed up on it. But it was a 30. What is the base price of it before you started at bumping it up?
It's
30-something, $35,000, $37,000 with no options. And he ordered the self-driving option package and the biggest battery package.
It's a $50,000.
And it's probably $49,000, $50,000 by the time he was going to get his model. And he was preparing to take it on a long-range trip to Maine this weekend. And it was beyond the purported range of the battery pack one way, and he was prepared to be stopping along the way for a lunch with some pals where he was going to be charging up, doing interim charging before he got to his destination. That is yet to take place. Maybe I'll have a report on it later on, but it's going to be interesting to see, because as the listeners on this show know to me, I have been down on the concept of electric car success for only those people who drive long distances on a daily basis, such as cross-country trips. And while the battery charging stations are increasing probably every week somewhere in this country, I still don't see how people are going to be comfortable driving a purely electric car on sightseeing-type driving areas for some time to come.
You're romanticizing the whole driving experience. I mean, I know it's the middle of summer. We all go on road trips. But we don't go on road trips all year long, and most people don't drive all that long
distances.
Which
is why we liked the Bolt, both you and I, and said it's perfectly acceptable, as is any of those cars at 235-mile ranges. You can go to New York and back, which is probably the kind of type of minimum thing you want to know you can do with an electric car, since we are a commutable mobile group of homeowners.
Can you get to
up
Boston?
Here and all that. Yeah.
Just?
No.
Okay.
No problem.
Okay. All right.
You can't go to Boston and back.
So,
but
Jay's right.
That was my next question.
Jay's right.
All right. So how do you, okay, so you go, you charge up, and then you come back. Basically.
That's correct. Yeah. Right. And that's what most, probably 85% of the people will do all the time. Yeah. But then there are the nomads like me.
Going to Boston means driving on the Mass Turnpike. Do you really want to drive on the Mass Turnpike? Okay.
Robin is notorious for – Robin can be found from time to time.
Well, do you really want to drive on the Mass Turnpike when you might be less than half charged and you get stuck in a big, long traffic jam for a while with your air conditioning running and your radio running and you're fuming at
Plus, I'm not. I know that I have been told or assured by numerous.
Range anxiety is something. It's a psychological situation.
Well,
if you don't
know since
what's
we've
going.
Got people who are completely anxious about you know whether or not the sun is going to rise, I would just think that layering on some range anxiety should be good for the pharmaceutical companies, ne?
That's one way of looking at it.
I'm trying to make
that's
lemonade.
It's not car related, I don't think, but okay.
Okay, but
anxiety,
range
is a big factor in.
I would.
But I mean, I know somebody who never fills her tank up until the light goes on, and she has range anxiety when the light goes on, and if she is driving from A to Z.
But that would be solvable by filling the tank up.
And
then you know
easily solvable. It's not a problem when you've got gas stations every so many miles.
Electric cars, the range is going to increase over the next few years. There
yes,
are going to be
will.
More charging
right.
stations.
We
it's
won't be able to run this
be...
show in 5 or 10 years because this particular show will be completely out of date, and that's all coming. But in the meantime,
like all the old cars.
Well, that's, you know, in the final 3 minutes, even though it was a week or so ago, what was most interesting to me about the Falls Village Car Show is how many people turned up because, you know what, people like cars.
Okay, here's the good news. There is hope. We're always, us old people are always, you know, the millennial this, millennials that. Actually, there's a study that came out, 80% or over 80% of the millennials actually want to drive and like driving. And it and the number of millennials wanting to drive or enjoying driving is actually higher than
well,
the baby boomers.
There have been predictions about the complete opposite happening. So this
no,
is a really great study result that's come out, okay?
It's just flying in the face of the so-called, like, oh,
pundits.
No. It's you start to say, wait a second, I know kids who are learning to drive. Hey, wait, I know kids who like to drive. Hey, I know kids who don't really want to.
Well, you've got self-driving cars coming along, too. And this is the thing. There was another poll that I heard on over on
is
the TV.
Is that a poll or a study?
Well, it was a two-person poll. One person was interviewed saying she wants to drive and will never think about not driving. And then there's another person who's going to be perfectly happy using Ubers. Well,
driving, and we'll get back to that. We can get back to that, okay. And it brings me on a topic that we don't have time to start this week.
But remind
driving
me.
Is
a verb.
It's a sport.
It's an activity that's becoming very different. There's everyday driving on the road, which is a practical thing that we all need to do to get from A to B. And that whole driving experience has changed a lot and has become a lot more sophisticated. We drive cars that are way more complicated than they ever were, and it takes a certain set of skills. On the other hand, we like driving for the enjoyment of going on a windy road with a stick shift and
top down.
So if you have one or two cars, one of them can be a very practical car. One of them can be a fun car. I've spent the last, since our last show, I went online and said, well, what kind of cars can we find? You know, smallish, practical, fun stick shift cars that are fairly affordable, good cars, nice cars, everyday cars, and fun to drive. And there are a lot of options out there.
There are.
And we can talk about that versus the practicality of cars in our everyday commutes maybe next time.
And we've got flying cars on the horizon
right,
as well.
I did notice that.
And I don't know when we'll talk about that, but that's, you know,
maybe
I don't know
whether
that's ever going to really
even
come.
Even I won't be around.
Really? Okay.
All right. He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.